Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We hope you all had a good holiday weekend, and for the students out there, an enjoyable spring break. Today, we open our show with the latest presidential primary results from three western states that held caucuses over the weekend, where Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders scored sweeping victories. Then on Green Scene, hear about the state's plans for Southern California Gas, a Sempra energy company, to mitigate the greenhouse gas emissions caused by that massive methane leak north of Los Angeles, and why it may matter to San Diego ratepayers. We'll also have a heads-up for motorists about a full freeway closure of northbound Interstate 805 for several nights this week. Then we'll have a health alert regarding a recall of pistachios sold here in San Diego County and elsewhere. We'll also have highlights from Pope Francis' Easter message to the world, including his call for compassionate treatment of refugees. Here in East County, we'll tell you an inspiring story about a church that once burned to the ground and has now stepped forward to help parishioners of a Spring Valley church that suffered fire damage last week, just in time for Easter services. What if politicians had to wear their donors' names whenever they cast a vote? It could happen if an initiative launched by a San Diego man gets on the ballot, and we'll have details. County supervisors have approved a moratorium on medical marijuana dispensaries in the unincorporated areas of the county. It's a temporary ban for now, but could become permanent, and we'll tell you why on today's show. The tobacco industry is hard at work trying to snuff out reforms that could be headed for the November ballot, and some are accusing legislators of holding up a key action to try and run out the clock for opponents of reforms. We have some important health news for you today, including an update on a mumps outbreak at the University of San Diego and the first sexually transmitted case of Zika virus found in San Diego County, plus the latest advice from the Centers for Disease Control on how to protect your partner from Zika virus if you have traveled to regions where the illness is prevalent. Our newsmaker interviews today are with Mark Umphries and Michelle Curtis from the Helix Water District. They'll be talking about water supply for our region in light of the drought and the recent rains, as well as water quality issues in the wake of the Flint, Michigan lead poisoning crisis. Plus, hear how you can get rebates on items ranging from sprinkler nozzles to cisterns and more on today's show. Lemon Grove's next History Alive program will feature a fascinating and nearly forgotten piece of San Diego's history, the time that the Russians nearly took control of our region. Learn more on today's show. From Public News Service, hear about a new bill in Sacramento to protect bees from a deadly pesticide that's been blamed for bee colony collapse. Plus, learn about how you can volunteer to help the National Weather Service document rainfall and snow levels in our region. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with an update from the presidential primary. Three states held Democratic presidential caucuses on Saturday, and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders soundly defeated former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton by hefty margins in all three western states, Alaska, Washington, and Hawaii. His big win led one leading news site to tout the resurrection of Bernie Sanders as its Easter Sunday headline. There were no Republican matches held over the weekend. In Alaska, Sanders won a whopping 82% of the vote, while Clinton took just 18%. Washington State was won by Sanders with nearly 73% of the vote to Clinton's 27%. And in Hawaii, Sanders won with 70% of the delegates to Clinton's 30%. Sanders beat Clinton in Alaska and Washington by even larger margins than President Barack Obama did in the 2008 election. Washington is among the nation's most liberal states, much like the West Coast states of Oregon and California that have yet to go to the polls. Though the Clinton campaign is banking on winning another big state, New York, the state she lives in and has represented in Congress. In winning Hawaii, Sanders showed his ability to attract a diverse range of voters. Hawaii is one of the most racially diverse states in the nation, with only 24% of the population white, 42% are Asian, 9% Pacific Islanders, 2% African American, and the rest multiracial or other. In contrast to Hawaii, Alaska has a population that's about 69% white, with 16% American Indian or Alaskan Native, and the rest a smattering of other races. Alaska, home to substantial anti-establishment sentiment, earlier awarded the lion's share of its delegates in the Republican primary to Donald Trump. Saturday's wins add to Sanders' momentum. The progressive senator has now won 15 states, with other recent wins by very substantial margins, too. Democratic primaries and caucuses are not winner-take-all unless one candidate gets over 85% of the votes. Instead, the votes are awarded proportionally. But Clinton still has the edge in overall delegates. According to Associated Press, Sanders now has 975 pledged delegates, just 268 behind Clinton, who has 1,245. But Clinton has 469 superdelegates, those elected officials who vote as delegates, compared to Sanders, who has just 29 superdelegates. Currently, the total count, pledged and superdelegates combined, is Clinton 1,712 to Sanders 1,004. A total of 2,383 is needed to win the nomination, with 2,049 still up for grabs in state that have not yet voted. Sanders does have a path to win, but only if he can continue winning states by large margins. And even then, he will likely need a substantial number of the superdelegates to switch allegiances and vote for him at the Democratic National Convention. There is precedent for that, as Mrs. Clinton knows from experience. Back in 2008, she started the primary off with a 3-1 lead over Barack Obama in superdelegates. But after his big win in the popular vote nationally, Obama wound up with a 2-1 lead in the superdelegates, securing the nomination after dozens changed their votes. Superdelegates, unlike other delegates, are not pledged to support any specific candidate, even on the first ballot, and can shift their support at any time.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. Could ratepayers across Southern California be stuck with the bill for Sempra Energy's Southern California Gas Company to offset the massive greenhouse gas emissions from the Porter Ranch gas leak at Aliso Canyon north of Los Angeles? The massive leak pumped about 100,000 tons of methane gas into the atmosphere over several months before it was finally plugged. That's the equivalent of 8 million metric tons of carbon dioxide, several times more than the 1.5 million metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions that California reduced last year through its landmark climate change regulations. Now the California Air Resources Board wants Southern California Gas to pay for offsetting the emissions caused by the gas leak. How? By paying to plug abandoned wells, funding purchase of more efficient furnaces and water heaters for property owners, reducing methane-producing waste at landfills, and installing devices to capture methane at dairy farms across the state, according to a plan proposed by regulators. The mitigation plan was ordered by Governor Jerry Brown. The utility has agreed to pay for these pollution-slashing measures over the next 5 or 10 years under the proposal. Sempra has estimated its cost to date from the leak at $330 million, including the lost gas and temporary relocation costs for thousands of residents displaced. According to the Los Angeles Times, company spokesperson Melissa Bailey said the company was evaluating actions to fully mitigate the climate impacts of the gas leak. The word ratepayers does not appear in the proposal, so it appears that the regulators have not yet addressed whether Sempra could charge back its costs related to the leak and the greenhouse gas emissions mitigation to ratepayers. But in the recent years, the California Public Utilities has approved plans to leave ratepayers, not shareholders, footing the bill, at least in part, for utility-caused errors such as the San Onofre nuclear facility radiation leaks that led to a permanent shutdown, and the 2007 wildfires that state regulators found to be caused in part by SDG&E power lines. So, ratepayers in San Diego and across Southern California, where utility rates are already amongst the highest in the nation, may well see yet another rate hike in the future.
This is Miriam Raftery with a heads-up for motorists. Caltrans will be closing all lanes on northbound Interstate 805 for 4 nights this week to install median barriers as part of a project that also includes carpool lane expansion and a bridge widening. The freeway closure will occur Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights from 9:30 p.m. to 5 a.m. The freeway will be closed between La Jolla Village Drive and Miramar Road all the way north to Interstate 5. Detour signs will be placed to direct motorists off of 805 to westbound State Route 52 and then northbound 5. Access to and from 805 at La Jolla Village Drive and Miramar Road will be restricted. However, travelers wishing to exit at Nobel Drive or Governor Drive will be allowed to continue north on I-805 to their exits.
This is Leon Thompson with a health report on East County Magazine. American Gourmet's roasted and salted pistachios are made locally in Vista and sold at stores countywide, including Trader Joe's. Now the company has announced a recall due to possible salmonella contamination. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced that the company was asked by its supplier of pistachios to initiate the voluntary recall. In addition to San Diego County, the products were also sold in San Bernardino and Riverside counties. The recall packages have best buy dates between November 5, 2016 and March 13, 2017. The recall includes 2.5, 4.5, and 7.5 ounce packages. Consumers can return the recall products to retailers for full refunds. 11 people were sickened earlier this month when another California-based company, Wonderful Pistachios, announced a similar recall of its packages, which were sold by retailers, including Trader Joe's. No illness has yet been linked to the latest recall. However, the FDA reports that salmonella poisoning can cause fever, nausea, vomiting, bloody diarrhea, and abdominal pain, as well as more serious illnesses, including aneurysms and sometimes fatal infections, particularly in children, the elderly, or people with weakened immune systems.
On Good Friday, Pope Francis washed the feet of European immigrants, including Christians, Muslims, and Hindus, demonstrating his outreach to people of all faiths and calling for world peace. Then in his Easter Sunday Mass at the Vatican, the pontiff stated, "This day invites us not to forget those men and women seeking a better future, an even more numerous throng of migrants and refugees, including many children fleeing war, hunger, poverty, and social injustice." He also criticized those who seek to stop migrants fleeing persecution in the Middle East and North Africa from seeking a safe haven in Europe and elsewhere. "All too often," the Pope said, "these brothers and sisters of ours meet along the way with death, or in any event, rejection by those who could offer them welcome and assistance." The Pope also denounced blind and brutal terrorism just days after the deadly ISIS bombings in Brussels, Belgium. Amid tight security, Pope Francis spoke to a crowd of 200,000 faithful, delivering what he called a message of life for the world. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson for East County Magazine. A pre-dawn fire Saturday morning caused heavy damage at the Eastbound Bar and Grill, a popular eatery on Main Street in downtown Lakeside. A delivery driver spotted smoke and called 911. A nearby resident reported hearing an explosion and then also spotted flames coming through the roof. Fortunately, the Lakeside Fire Station was close by and crews responded promptly. The fire destroyed the kitchen and also damaged a nearby business. Cause of the fire remains under investigation, but owner Ben Clevenger told KNSD News that it may have been due to an electrical wiring issue in a freezer.
A fire burned down the Full Gospel Church of God in Christ in Spring Valley last weekend. The Pentecostal church serves a congregation of about 30 people, mainly African Americans. Just in time for Easter Sunday services, another church previously burned in a fire has offered up space for Full Gospel's worship services, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. Cal Fire is investigating the cause of the fire, but a video posted on Facebook by a member of the Full Gospel Church indicates the fire began in a motorhome parked nearby. Pastor Jesse Walters started the Full Gospel Church 5 years ago after seeking a neighborhood in need of a church. He told the Union Tribune, "Our faith is tried. The church has insurance, but the destruction of its space and a piano that provided music for the faithful are painful losses." But Walters vowed to rebuild, stating, "Jesus rose and will rise too." Meanwhile, Pastor George McKinney at St. Stephen's Cathedral Church of God in Christ in the Valencia Park neighborhood of San Diego has given the displaced Full Gospel congregation use of an annex at St. Stephen's. St. Stephen's itself burned in 1985 after a mentally ill man set it on fire. Back then, St. Stephen's congregation got help from a traveling evangelist who donated the use of a large tent for the church to use for worship services and feeding the homeless for months until it could rebuild. So now Reverend McKinney is giving back this Easter season, a time when Christians around the world celebrate resurrection and a time of new beginnings. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
What if politicians in California had to wear NASCAR-style stickers emblazoned with the logos of their campaign contributors? If John Kotz, a San Diego conservative, gets his way, it could happen. Kotz is bankrolling a $1 million effort to get an initiative onto the November ballot that would force state legislators to wear the names of their largest donors whenever they are voting on the Senate or Assembly floor, in committees or in subcommittees. The measure gives new meaning to full disclosure. Just imagine, instead of some cumbersome record searches to learn if your legislators are beholden to, say, big energy, insurance or tobacco corporations, labor unions or other special interests, spectators in Sacramento could simply look at the names their elected officials are wearing. Kotz predicts broad public support for the measure, which he believes could help reduce corruption by making legislators less eager to pocket hefty donations and then vote to support their donors' interests instead of the public interest. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Albert.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Leon Thompson with a health and wellness report on East County Magazine. By unanimous vote, San Diego supervisors voted last week to adopt an immediate 45-day moratorium on medical marijuana collectives with the possibility of making the ban permanent. The move came after the Ramona Community Planning Group sent a letter to the supervisors asking for a ban or changes to regulations. Ramona currently has one of the only two dispensaries in the unincorporated areas. The second is in unincorporated El Cajon near Gillespie Field. The county's Planning and Development Services Department has issued building permits for four more, including two in Ramona, one in rural El Cajon, and another in Valley Center. Four additional applications are pending, including two in Lakeside and one each in Ramona and Julian. The moratorium would put the brakes on all those projects. Supervisors heard testimony from over two dozen people who support the ban and seven opposed. Opponents voiced concerns about traffic on winding rural roads by potentially impaired drivers, as well as potential access to minors. A representative from Drug-Free Julian also brought a petition with 400 signatures of people against dispensaries. Supporters cited a need for convenient access to medical marijuana for patients in rural areas where public transit is largely lacking and winter weather can make it difficult to travel long distances to fill their prescriptions. Supervisor Diane Jacob, who represents these counties, said she supports a longer-term ban, noting that in addition to the two legal dispensaries already open in the county, the city of San Diego has seven dispensaries open and six more approved. She also motioned for staff to craft zoning changes to require major use permits for dispensaries, a costly process, as well as a 1,000-foot buffer zone from residential properties and tough penalties for violations. Supervisor Horn agreed with Jacob in supporting a permanent ban on new dispensaries. Supervisors Greg Cox and Dave Roberts, however, indicated that while they support a temporary moratorium to allow staff time to fine-tune regulations, they do not support a ban. Both said, however, that they believe each community should have only one dispensary, not multiple outlets. The Ramona Sentinel reports that the moratorium, which expires in late April, could be extended for another 10 months, and after that, up to an additional year.
The tobacco industry is threatening to snuff out reform measures recently passed by the California legislature. The bills include raising the age for buying tobacco products to 21, regulating electronic cigarettes like tobacco, and empowering communities to raise taxes on tobacco products. But so far, none of these measures have been sent on to the governor's office for signature. Once there, the governor will have 12 days to sign or veto the legislation, or have the measures become law without his signature. But now the tobacco industry is threatening to hire paid signature gatherers and put a measure on the ballot to repeal all of the new laws. There's a hitch in those plans, however. The industry can't get started on its referendum campaign until the bills are signed into law. Pro-tobacco interests have suggested that legislators are intentionally delaying sending the bills to the governor in hopes of running out the clock for a successful ballot initiative challenge.
A spokesman for Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon has denied any intentional delay, insisting that the measures are merely in process, the Sacramento Bee reports. That process can take anywhere from a couple of days to several weeks or more for complex legislation. Governor Brown has not yet stated whether he intends to sign the bills or veto them, sending tobacco reform efforts up in smoke. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with a health report. 5 cases of mumps have been diagnosed in students at the University of San Diego, the County Health and Human Services Agency reports. The first case was diagnosed in February. It is unknown where that student contracted the illness. The new cases are all close contacts of the first student diagnosed. Mumps is a highly contagious viral disease that can be prevented through vaccines. The county is working with USD to provide free vaccinations to all undergraduates at the university to prevent the outbreak from spreading. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county public health officer, says several colleges and universities across the country are having mumps outbreaks. She cautions spring break is going to bring an opportunity for this disease to spread, so students should be sure they are up to date with mumps and all other recommended vaccines. Mumps is spread by coughing, sneezing, or close contact with an infected person. Typical symptoms of mumps include fever, headache, earache, sore throat, and inflammation of the salivary glands, which results in swelling and tenderness along the jawline. Severe complications are rare but can include meningitis, decreased fertility, permanent hearing loss, and in extreme cases, miscarriage in pregnant women during the first trimester. There's no treatment for mumps. Most people recover without problems. The best way to prevent mumps is by getting the MMR vaccine. That's measles, mumps, and rubella. 2 doses of the vaccine are recommended, one at 12 to 15 months of age, and another at 4 to 6 years of age. A 3rd booster shot is often recommended during an outbreak. For more information about mumps, other vaccine-preventable diseases, and the vaccines that protect against them, contact the county's immunization program at sdiz.org.
The first Zika virus case acquired through sexual transmission in San Diego has been confirmed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. The woman was infected with the virus in February after intimate contact with an ill man who returned from a trip to Colombia. The patient was not pregnant and had not traveled out of the country. Fortunately, both she and her partner have fully recovered. County Public Health Officer Wilma Wooten advises travelers to countries where Zika is present should protect themselves from mosquito bites while abroad and prevent sexual transmission when they return. Next to abstinence, condoms are the best prevention method against any sexually transmitted infections. The Zika virus is transmitted mostly through mosquito bites, but a man with Zika can transmit it to his sex partners. Men who travel from Zika-affected countries should protect their partners, especially women who are pregnant or trying to become pregnant, by following these CDC guidelines. The CDC recommends that a man who traveled to an area with Zika should refrain from sex or use condoms for at least 8 weeks, and if he develops Zika or symptoms, he should abstain from sex or use condoms for at least 6 months to prevent pregnancy in his partner. Zika virus is suspected of causing a severe birth defect, microcephaly, a condition where babies' heads and brains are smaller than normal. Thousands of these cases occurred after mothers in South America were infected with Zika during pregnancy. Pregnant women are urged to avoid travel to countries or territories where Zika virus is present. According to the CDC, no mosquito-transmitted cases of Zika have yet been recorded in the continental United States, although cases are being reported in Puerto Rico. 40 countries and territories in the Americas, Africa, and the Pacific Ocean have recently reported locally acquired Zika cases. Although Mexico has cases from local mosquitoes, none have been in Baja California near our border. The mosquitoes known to transmit Zika virus, primarily the Aedes aegypti or yellow fever mosquito, but also the Aedes albopictus or Asian tiger mosquito, are not native to San Diego, but small numbers of both have been discovered here in recent years. These mosquitoes, unlike local ones, are black and have distinctive white stripes, and unlike the native mosquitoes, they like to feed during daylight hours and are known to be very aggressive biters. The San Diego County Department of Environmental Health Vector Control Program encourages residents to protect against mosquitoes ever since 2003 when another virus, West Nile virus, showed up in California, including San Diego. The invasive mosquitoes that can transmit Zika virus like to live and breed in urban areas, even inside homes and backyards, and they can breed in containers as small as a thimble of water. County officials remind the public to follow the Prevent, Protect, and Report guidelines. Prevent mosquito breeding sites by each week dumping out and cleaning containers that hold water inside and outside your home. Fill plant saucers with sand or gravel so that water won't form pools where mosquitoes can breed. Protect yourself from mosquito bites by wearing long sleeves and pants when outdoors or using insect repellent, preferably ones containing DEET. Make sure screens on windows and doors are in good condition with no holes or tears to keep insects out. And finally, report if you are being bitten by mosquitoes during daylight hours or if you find mosquitoes that match the description of the yellow fever mosquito or Asian tiger mosquito by calling the county's vector control program at 858-694-2888. That number again is 858-694-2888.
This is Liz Albert with the sports report for East County Magazine here on KNSJ. It was another solid crowd at Viejas Arena as the Aztecs took on the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets in the National Invitation Tournament quarterfinal. The winner gets a chance to go to the semifinals in New York City and take on George Washington University. The defense wasn't as totally there as in the game against Washington, but we saw the same drives to the hoop and the same offensive aggressiveness. SDSU won on a 10-2 run with 11:44 left in the first half. Trey Kell had 13 points and hit 2 3-pointers. It wasn't always easy. The Aztecs had the Jackets down by 10 at one point, but Tech came back to pull up alongside the Aztecs at 31 all at the half. It was a close game to start the second half, but the Aztecs blew the game open midway through the half thanks to Winston Shepard's 7 points in the first 8 minutes and 3 drawn fouls. Trey Kell had 3 3-pointers in the game, and the Aztecs won the NIT quarterfinal 72-56. They're headed to Madison Square Garden to take on George Washington on Tuesday night.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Water issues have been all over the headlines here in California and nationwide recently. And so today I'm very pleased to have two special guests from the Helix Water District, Mark Humphreys, who is the Director of Water Quality, and Michelle Curtis, who is the Water Conservation Specialist. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Thank you for inviting us.
Let's start by talking about our water supply. As most of you listeners probably know, we've been in a 5-year historic drought here in California, but this winter we've had some pretty heavy El Nino rainfall. So how are we doing? How is the water supply looking?
It's looking better than it has. We're still not where we need to be yet. You may have heard on the news the reservoir levels in Northern California. Some of those are at above average for the first time in the last 3 years, which is great news. However, down here locally, El Nino hasn't quite panned out like we hoped. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen as much rain as we had hoped to see.
Yeah, how are our local reservoir levels looking? What percentage are they at? Do you know?
They're probably averaging around 50% or less.
Mm-hmm.
And We just haven't had the amount of rainfall we were anticipating from the storm. It's really been diverted northward into Northern California. We're probably running at about 20% of the local runoff that we had hoped for this season. It's just been a poor runoff year so far.
Yeah. On the other hand, as you note, the state itself is doing a lot better in that regard because we're getting the good Sierra snowpack and the reservoirs in Northern California are filling up. And of course, some of our water still comes from Northern California. So the governor at one point had mandated very strict conservation levels statewide, 20%, and varying levels for different water districts. How are we looking on that? I understand there's some movement afoot to maybe reduce the conservation mandates statewide and right here in San Diego for those districts like Helix that have made efforts to increase their water supply and not be so dependent on Northern California water.
There are. We've had a proactive campaign here in San Diego County, Helix Water District, our wholesaler, and the other agencies. When those original regulations came out, they assigned a range from 8 to 36% cutback for individual agencies compared to water use in 2013. Mm-hmm. And we had some concerns about that because it didn't take into account some of the investments that local regions like San Diego had made in, for example, the desalinization plant out at Carlsbad. And so we've been writing letters, doing numerous visits by our board up to Sacramento, trying to see if we could get those regulations to be more equitable and to take that into account.
And yeah, it also didn't take into account how much people had already conserved. I know in the Helix District, you've had very good ratepayers who've been quite responsive at cutting back and conserving when they've been asked to in the past. So it's a lot harder to cut, you know, to cut 20 or 30% when you've already cut way back without actually losing trees or, you know, things that really hurt.
It is, and that's one of the concerns that we raised. We had a lot of conservation prior to 2013. As you know, San Diego County's lived conservation for the last two decades.
Right.
So we're really ahead of the curve, more so than some areas up north.
Well, and we're also in a dry area where it's harder to conserve if you're in an area that gets more rainfall. It's a little easier to cut back on your household water
use. It is. There's less that you need for outdoor landscaping.
Correct. So are the governor and the state regulators up there going to relax those mandates for Helix water users?
They are. We got good news just last week.
Ah.
The feedback that we'd provided regarding the drought resilient supplies was taken into account, and they made a regional adjustment down here, taking into account that desal plant. And for Helix, that translates into a reduction of 8%. So where we were at a 20% mandated reduction, that's now been reduced down to 12%.
Very good. So that's immediate for the ratepayers?
That is immediate. We're still working internally on what that's going to look like for our customers, mm-hmm, and how that's going to impact the current restrictions we have. So we'll be discussing that with our board over the next few weeks and communicating that out to our customers once a decision is made.
Very good. And I'm sure that the ratepayers out there are also wondering, as we start to get more water supplies, could we ever see a time where the rates might go down, or where at least the five-year increase that was approved in the rates, you know, where they may not be as high?
That's a good possibility. Those five-year rate plans set an upper limit. So our expectation is that we'll be lower than those numbers. And certainly any year in which we get a lot of local runoff will help offset, mm-hmm, our rates.
Very good. And I know, Michelle, you were mentioning to me that if anybody out there is listening and has been having trouble meeting the mandates, and if meeting the mandates means that you have to let your fire-safe landscaping die or fire buffers or big trees die, that there's a way to apply for a waiver through the district. Can you tell us about that?
There is, and we've actually had this as an offering since we went under mandatory restrictions last year. And if someone needs a waiver to keep their trees alive during the drought or to create that buffer in a high fire area, they can contact our conservation department and we can send them a form where they can apply for, make a request for what additional water they need. And we try and work with customers as much as we can within reason.
Excellent. So you can't get that waiver just because you want to keep the swimming pool full, but you can if it means protecting your property from fire.
Correct. And that's a big focus for us right now is the trees, especially out here in East County. We have a beautiful tree canopy that, mm-hmm, provides a lot of benefits, health, cooling, air quality. And so we really want to make sure that those trees survive through the drought. And we realize they might need water for the first time in the last 5 or 10 years just because that groundwater isn't available where it has been previously.
Yeah, very important. Let's talk a little bit more about supply. Now, I know that the San Diego area in general, including the Helix Water District, has done an awful lot to try to not be dependent so much on water coming from other areas. Mark, if we were to look back 5 or 10 years ago, what percentage of our water was coming from outside of the San Diego region, from Colorado River water or from Northern California?
It was probably close to 95%. And actually going back to 1990 when we had another severe drought, the County Water Authority made a concerted effort to work on projects to diversify our supply. And some of the recent projects that have been completed is a Carlsbad desalination plant that's bringing about 8% of our supply into the county now.
Yeah.
We also have an agreement with Imperial Irrigation District to transfer from ag to urban. And that's become a very reliable supply of Colorado River water for us. Also, the local agencies are working on their own projects, brackish water desalination. The city of San Diego is working on their pure water program to convert treated wastewater to this ultra-pure water
yeah.
that will supplement our drinking water supply. And then Helix as well and Padre Dam are looking at a similar project for East County.
Very good. And, of course, we also saw the San Vicente Reservoir locally that was the largest dam raise in U.S. history to increase the capacity of local storage there as well.
That was a key part of the County Water Authority's plan for our emergency water supply. If we're cut off from Metropolitan and Riverside County from an earthquake, for example, San Vicente and Lake Hodges alleviating reservoirs would supplement our local supplies.
Very reassuring. So 5 or 10 years ago, I understand that we were getting something like 95% of our water from outside of San Diego County. Is that correct?
That's about right, 10 years ago.
And what is it today?
We're probably closer to 50 to 60%.
Much better.
And they're projecting by 2035 that, and this is a goal, to get down to 30% from outside.
So 70% would be locally right here.
Locally.
Very good.
Part of that included that is the conservation that's being done right now as well.
Yeah.
So it's new supplies, conservation, and other programs.
Great. Let's talk about water quality. Now, that has been all over the national headlines. The water crisis in Flint, Michigan certainly has been front and center in the national news, where an entire city found its water supply poisoned by lead because they went to a different water supply. The pipes got corroded. They tried to save a few pennies by not putting an anti-corrosive chemical in there. And all of a sudden, you had an entire generation of children in Flint, Michigan suffering lead poisoning, which can be really damaging. So what's your take on that? As a water quality manager, how on earth could something like that happen? And do we have safeguards in place to make sure that that can't happen in the Helix Water District?
We certainly do. And California is, in particular, is very progressive on water regulations and very active. In the water industry in general, we're all astounded that that would happen. There were clearly failures in the regulatory process. The regulations have been in place since the 1990s, and they just keep getting more stringent, but various decision makers ignored or weren't aware of certain problems that led ultimately to the failure that they had. So it's really puzzling. In fact, there's still articles coming out every week and still revealing new information about what actually happened and why.
I think it's one of those areas we hear a lot of complaints about, you know, excessive government regulation, but this is probably one of those areas where regulation is a good thing because it's there to protect people from something like that.
And these weren't, no one considered these regulations excessive or difficult, but they apparently didn't follow them as they should have and made bad decisions along the way.
Yeah, very costly in the long run for everybody concerned.
A horrible situation.
Yeah. So here in California, we have more stringent regulations. I'm curious, right here in San Diego County and in the Helix Water District, do we have lead piping in the Helix system or in very many of the homes in this district?
In looking at our records and talking to former employees that were here in the 50s, there's no evidence that we ever had lead service lines.
That's good.
We talked to plumbers who have been in the area for decades. They've never seen lead plumbing in homes. And from what we understand, that lead pipes were not used in our area. So we're pretty confident.
Very good.
We don't have it. Of course, we do have homes with copper pipe, lead solder, and brass fittings that have some lead in them. So because of that, we continually monitor for lead and copper and make sure our water quality is non-corrosive to that.
Very good. You've mentioned you even go out periodically and test some of the water out of some of those homes, those older homes.
That's part of their federal regulations. Every 3 years, we find 50 homes that are willing to volunteer, and they have to meet certain criteria. They have to represent the most likely homes to have a lead problem, if there was one. Typically, they're built in 1984 before the no lead solder rules took effect. So they represent worst case. The individuals, homeowners, are shown how to sample according to EPA regs. We pick up the samples, have them analyzed, provide them the results. And since we've been doing, we started doing this in the early 90s, 1991, we have non-detects on lead. So
very good. That's reassuring.
And that's every 3 years. We just finished a set in this past summer, and the same results. So, and this is quite typical for Southern California water supplies. Our water is not considered corrosive. It's not like Flint River.
Yeah.
We have a fair amount of alkalinity, which buffers our pH and hardness.
So you might have taste issues, but you're not going to have the health issues.
Yeah.
Huh? There you go. Another water issue that's been in the headlines internationally is down in Brazil, where they've had the outbreak of the Zika virus and all of these babies being born with severe birth defects. There's one theory that maybe Zika isn't the only thing responsible for that. There's a theory out there I've read that larvicides that were sprayed in the public water supply down there in the areas that have some of these high incidences of these problems could possibly also be a factor. So it begs the question, do we put larvicides in our water here in San Diego County or in Helix?
We certainly don't. That is highly regulated, and how we protect our watershed is highly regulated by the state. We would not allow it. We don't use them. The other comment I would make is that I understand that some of the systems down in South America have open reservoirs. They treat the water, then they put it in an open tank or basin, so it's exposed to aerial spraying and mosquito.
Yeah, pesticides.
So they could have direct application of these things into their drinking water. And all our system is sealed. From the time it leaves our filtration plant to the customer's home, it's in a closed pipe or in a closed tank.
That's, I'm sure, very reassuring to people out there. Let's move on and talk about conservation. Michelle, can you tell us a little bit about just how well the Helix ratepayers have been doing on the conservation front?
Sure. They have responded well, as they always have in the past. So we'd like to give a big thank you to all of our customers. We put out a call for a 20% reduction in water use compared to 2013 last June. Mm-hmm. And as of last month, we've seen a 21% reduction district-wide.
So they very good.
It's very good. They've gone above and beyond. And that's going to have a significant impact, especially as our target has now been reduced from 20% down to 12%.
Very good. 12% conservation
yes.
mandate now. For those people that still want to conserve more, even if you don't have to, it's still obviously a very good idea. We're all doing our part to use less water, which is a precious resource. And of course, you can also save money if you're using less water, since the cost of it is continually going up as due to all the supply issues and the cost of building new supply like the Carlsbad desalinization plant. So for those folks that might be interested in finding out how they can save water and what products they could perhaps get rebates on, what information do you have for us, Michelle?
Helix has quite a few resources available, and some of which our customers aren't aware of. One is a free home water use evaluation that we offer to all of our residential customers, and we also offer irrigation audits to our commercial and multifamily properties.
So if we just call you, you'll come out and come to the property and look at what somebody has and tell them how they can do better?
Exactly. It's a free service for all of our customers. Call into conservation and request it, and we do a walkthrough of your property and leave you with a recommendation checklist of things you can do short-term and long-term to make improvements.
Excellent. Now, obviously, it costs a lot of money sometimes if you want to rip out a lawn or start trying to save your rainwater and use it to water with or something. What are some of the things that there might be rebates available on right now?
Right now, there's a regional rebate program run through our wholesaler Metropolitan Water District, and it's through a program called SoCal Water Smart. Mm-hmm. You can find them at SoCalWaterSmart.com. And their main focus right now is on exterior water use. So it's going to focus on the irrigation.
So you're not going to get the low-flow shower heads and toilets right now.
They do have rebates for the low-flow toilets, but the dollar amount has gone down. Mm-hmm. They're offering a $40 rebate for those. The focus has really been on the irrigation system, so sprinkler nozzles.
Yeah, which is where most of the water is used in Southern California.
Exactly. So there are rebates for rain barrels. You can get a $75 rebate for up to 4 rain barrels per property.
Very good.
If you have a larger property and would like more storage, they're also offering a rebate for cisterns, and they'll rebate $300 for a cistern.
Now, cistern is a word from my grandmother's era. We haven't heard it much in recent times. For those listeners that don't know what a cistern is, can you tell us?
It's basically just a really large rain barrel. They can go underground, but typically here they're above ground, more like a water tank, and they'll usually hold at least a few hundred gallons up to a few thousand, depending on the size available.
Good. This would probably be a good time to throw in that if you're going to look at a rain barrel, it's important to buy one that's intended to be a rain barrel and not try to do it yourself, converting a wine barrel or something, as some people have tried to do. And the reason for that is the mosquito issue locally. We do have some of these tropical mosquitoes that can carry West Nile virus or dengue fever. And you want to be sure that you get one that's tightly sealed so that you don't solve one problem and create a new one.
Yes, that's a good reminder. Also, as a condition of the rebate program, you want to make sure whatever you purchase is designated as a rain barrel or a rain cistern on your receipt, because they do use that as your documentation to give you your rebate.
Very good. And you can also get rebates on different kinds of sprinkler and irrigation systems that are water-wise.
There are. There's a product now that's called a high-efficiency rotating sprinkler nozzle, and it was created as a retrofit for your basic pop-up sprinkler head. And the benefit to those are they put out bigger, heavier water drops, so you lose less to wind and sun evaporation. So for the water you are putting out, more of it actually gets down to the soil where it can be used. Mm-hmm. And they're offering a rebate currently of $2 per nozzle if you purchase a minimum of 30.
What about tossing the turf? We all know that lawns are probably the biggest water hogs out there in the average residence. What options are available for people that want to get rid of their lawn?
The Toss the Turf rebate was a very popular one last year.
I know. I tried to get it. It was gone.
Did you miss out? Yeah, that was a rebate that was actually available for 2 or 3 years previously, but it really got traction once the governor's mandates went into effect last May and June. Unfortunately, the funding did run out for that, so currently there's no rebate available. However, there is discussion. There's a possibility that our wholesaler, the San Diego County Water Authority, they're looking at getting grant funding for a regional program that they're hoping to have more information for this summer.
Very good. That said, even if you pay for ripping the lawn out yourself or do it yourself, you're still going to save some money in your water bill by going to either an artificial turf, hardscaping, or low water use plants that can be very pretty and attractive for those that want a more natural solution.
And that's always going to be our recommendation, is to go for the living plants. You get so many other benefits from those. And we're really looking for long-term sustainable solutions. Mm-hmm. So while it's great that a lot of people let their lawn go dormant or dead because of the drought, or they took it out and replaced it with mulch in the meantime, it's a better option to put in those low-flow plants that are climate appropriate. Because we know the drought cycle is going to come back around.
Yeah.
So the more sustainable landscaping we have, the better off we'll be.
And the artificial turf actually puts off heat. There's chemicals in some of them, especially if you could have your kids out playing on it. That's probably not the best
choice. It's not always the best choice for every application.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. And there's some classes, I understand, where you can learn about the low water use plants?
There are. We're hosting a class on April 9th that's free. It's open to Helix customers, but it's also open to customers of other water districts. And it's going to be taught by a local landscape expert. It's a 3-hour workshop, and it's focused on how to retrofit your landscaping.
Where will that be, and do people need to sign up ahead of time?
They do. We're hosting it at our operations center in El Cajon, and we do require pre-registration just to make sure we have enough seats and materials available. And they can go to our website at hwd.com and register online.
Let's move on and talk about one of my favorite topics, which is the effort to save Lake Jennings. As background listeners, a couple of years ago, after the Helix Water District had taken this back from the county, several years ago actually, it was losing money for the district. And so because of that, there was a concern that to be financially responsible to the ratepayers, that perhaps the lake should be closed for recreational purposes, or at least shut down the campground. And then Director Joel Scalziti said, well, wait a minute, let's start a committee to study this and maybe we can figure out a way to turn it around. And I understand that there's been great progress made in that. Tell us about that.
In the past 3 years, the progress has just been amazing, particularly comparing it to other campgrounds of similar size. It's done so well financially, great community support, groups out helping with the trails and painting. So it's really been a great success story.
But what are the secrets? How did they turn it around?
It's been incremental. It started with some changes to our fishing program. We're stocking more and larger trout, which attracted a lot more fishermen.
Sounds good.
They've been continually making improvements to the campground. But recently, we brought on a new manager who's just been tremendous in social media. She has a wonderful Facebook page.
Fabulous. I know you can go bring your
videos.
Kayak now and kayak
kayaks.
On the lake.
We got approval from the state to allow kayaks on the lake.
Mm-hmm. You just had a spring carnival?
We just had a spring carnival. It's always popular. We've got a photo contest. I believe it goes through May.
Oh, and where can people get information about that for all the shutterbugs out there?
Actually, you can find out about it on our Helix website.
And, very good.
Yes.
And that's hwd.com, correct?
hwd.com.
Okay, very good. Well, that's all very, very exciting. Is there anything else new on the horizon for Lake Jennings?
Yes, we're right now talking about what we do long term. As you said, our fishing program will continue no matter what. With the success we're having with the campground, hopefully we'll be able to keep that going and continue to make improvements. Mm-hmm. And we have some pretty exciting ideas that if we're allowed to keep it going for a while that we hope to put in place.
Very good. It's certainly a beautiful lake. It's close in to the city, and yet it has those gorgeous mountain views. I know you've told me that it gives you the feeling that you're sort of out in the back country when you're really not. It's very accessible.
Very accessible. Beautiful sunsets and sunrises.
Yeah.
If you're out camping, we really let people know when sites are available.
Wonderful. Now, I believe there's a meeting or a vote coming up on this soon. Can you tell us about that?
We have a part of our committee reports. We give the board updates on how we're doing financially and some of the ideas we have for the future. And that's coming up. And hopefully we'll get good feedback on what we can look forward to in the future.
Excellent.
It's a great story that we're going to be able to tell.
Well, we're looking forward to telling it, to sharing that news once it's available. I'm going to let each of you have the last word here. Mark, let's start with you. Do you have any final thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners? Anything I haven't specifically asked you about that you would like our listeners to know?
Sure, thank you. Particularly because of all the publicity that the water industry is getting because of the Flint, Michigan situation, it's really disappointing for all the professionals that work in this field. And knowing the brilliant people who develop the regulations and enforce, particularly in California, they're just really very good scientists and regulators. So I would encourage people not to lose faith in the regulatory process. There are very good regulations in place, and Helix has been rigorously following them with good success. And I would encourage you to, if you have any concerns or questions, we really like hearing from our customers. There's a phone number they can reach us at on our website. We have information for typical water quality questions, and we'd love to hear from you. If you have any, whether it's a complaint or just a question, we'd love to hear from you.
Very good. It's very reassuring to hear that our water quality is in good hands here, it sounds like, in California and in the Helix Water District. Michelle, let's move to you. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners today?
My final thought ties in with what Mark was discussing about Flint. Helix has a new website that got launched last fall, and it has a lot of good information, a lot of detail on water quality, good fact sheets. And so I'd encourage all of our customers to go there, especially the new news blog section. This is something new where we're writing a few articles every week, and we address some of the current topics. So there's been an article on Flint that was there, and customers are able to sign up and have those news blogs delivered directly to their inbox. So it's a great way to get timely information and get accurate information from the source that can hopefully ease your mind for some of these troubling issues that come up.
Well, that sounds very, very helpful. Some excellent resources there at the site. I want to thank both of you for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ. We've been speaking with Mark Umphreys and Michelle Curtis from the Helix Water District. Thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Mary.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The Lemon Grove Historical Society invites the public to hear a provocative History Alive presentation by Jack Innes of San Diego Legends. He'll be speaking on April 7th at 7 o'clock in the evening in the Historical Society's headquarters at the H. Lee House in Lemon Grove. The topic will be the time long ago when San Diego nearly became a Russian city. That's right, says Historical Society President Helen Ofield. If the fates had prevailed, sushi, fish tacos, and craft beer would be history in this town. Instead, vodka, borscht, and anything made with potatoes would be standard fare here instead. On the plus side, Bellini and caviar would probably abound, provided you were in the Kremlin inner circle. Jack Innes, the last word in stories of the strange, hilarious, and true, will be filling you in on this little-known aspect of San Diego's past, and he'll be bringing the latest edition of San Diego Legends to this fascinating History Alive program. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A new bill aims to slow the collapse of bee colonies by making certain pesticides available only to trained professionals and by requiring labels on seeds and plants sold in nurseries that are treated with the toxic chemicals. Senate Bill 1282, the Pollinator Protection Act, was introduced recently in the state Senate and would regulate pesticides in a class called neonicotinoids. Paul Towers with the advocacy group Be Smart California says everyone has an interest in protecting bees.
Bees are responsible for 1 in 3 bites of food that we eat, and they are in precipitous decline. In fact, the last year on record, over 40% of California's honeybees died.
In January, the EPA put out a risk assessment of one of the pesticides called imidacloprid that said it is harmful to bees and may need to be regulated. Bayer, the company that makes these pesticides, including a rose and shrub spray commonly sold in garden stores, said that neonicotinoids are critical to protect agriculture from pests and are much safer than pesticides used in the past. Towers says surveys show that up to half of the bee-friendly plants purchased at garden centers have levels of pesticides high enough to injure or kill bees.
We need to give consumers the right information about the plants that they're purchasing so they don't mistakenly purchase something bee-friendly and, in fact, do more harm than good.
There have been similar efforts on a federal level. Last year, Representative John Conyers of Michigan introduced a bill called the Saving America's Pollinators Act of 2015, but it has stalled in the House Committee on Agriculture. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
We all want to know how much rain or snow has fallen in local communities and get accurate forecasts on future weather. Now you can help make that happen. The National Weather Service is looking for volunteers to gather info that will help them better predict the weather, particularly in mountain and desert areas where valuable data on precipitation is lacking. The Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network, nicknamed COCORAS, is a nonprofit group of volunteer precipitation observers. They report rain, hail, and snow, as well as any significant weather as it occurs. Jimmy Tager, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in San Diego, says anyone can join and it's easy to report the data. To volunteer just takes a few minutes a day, along with a 4-inch rain gauge and internet access. To get started, go to cocoraz.org. That's spelled COCORAHS.org. The website is easy to use, has instructions on how to record your observations, and a helpful video. The site also has daily maps of observers' reports showing where precipitation has fallen. The information gathered can be very valuable for hydrologists, farmers, weather forecasters, and others. If you have questions, you can call 858-675-8700. This has been a public service announcement for the National Weather Service.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery.
We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.